Odyssey celebrates Halloween, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Happy Monday. And each and every Monday through our political season, we've leaned on Lenny McAllister, a resident host who wears many hats in the field of education for his day job, but has a lot of experience in radio and talk, and political talk in particular. So the candidates ramping it up, Lenny, over the weekend. Thank you for being here.
Always enjoy being here with you, Larry.
Kamala Harris had Beyonce in Texas. She was in Philly last night. Donald Trump sold out Madison Square Garden, packed to the rafters, pulling out all the stops.
Yeah.
Had Robert Kennedy there. Had Hulk Hogan there. Had his wife there.
Which was a surprise. Even being in New York City is a surprise. If you think about it, what we saw this past weekend was like the confluence of modern politicking in America. You had Kamala Harris in eastern Pennsylvania talking to a significant voting bloc in Hispanic voters. You also had Donald Trump in New York City, which you would say New York's not swinging Republican, except for the fact that when you campaign nationally, you want those clips, you want those crowds, you want that energy. You can take all that footage from yesterday, and by Tuesday, if not today, you will see ads from the footage in Madison Square Garden to basically get the idea across to Americans from here to Montana that the energy momentum is going Trump's way.
Is there anybody that's going to be changed in their opinion or mind, or most importantly, their vote, by any of this in the next 8 days?
I think there's 50,000 voters per state that can determine, 50 to 100,000 voters per state that will determine the election, and they're still speaking to those voters. Now, if you consider that small percentage versus an electorate per state, it's a very small percentage. But if you look at the polls, Larry, it's basically, the last polls that came out were dead even, 50-50, 49-49, somewhere in there. So, yeah, nobody's talking to the other side. They're really trying to say, okay, who really is the movable middle? It's shrinking, but who is it? And honestly, at this point, it's a moving target. So in some regards, both sides are trying to figure out who is the movable middle. You have to identify them, then you have to convince them, and you got to do it within 8 days.
It's a really, I'm guessing, very small pool, but still, when the race is this close, significant.
It definitely is. And on top of that, the polling suggests that it's the economy. It's polling that it's also immigration. It's polling less on tone and tenor. So it's like, okay, how do I craft a message in a very short period of time to a very small segment of people that I have to go find? In a race where you have a candidate in Donald Trump that oftentimes doesn't poll all the way up to what his actual voting block is. We saw this in 16. We saw this in 20. There's a small percentage of Americans that will not tell you they're going to vote for Donald Trump. Then they'll go vote for Donald Trump, and you'll see it in the exit polls. The Harris people are trying to find those voters desperately and try to convince them within a week.
He lost the popular vote the last two elections.
Yes.
Yet won the Electoral College in 2016, much to many's surprise then. Claims he won 2020. You could argue that forever. It doesn't matter at this point in terms of what happens this year, except that if he doesn't win, there'll be claims that it was somehow, tilted, even though there has been so much scrutiny and so much effort to try to make sure this election is transparent and that there won't be that shadow of a doubt.
We will see lawsuits regardless of who, quote unquote, wins Tuesday night. And it's really not going to be Tuesday night, as you well know. We're probably talking about Wednesday or Thursday based on what's going to come out of Arizona and a few other of these swing states. So regardless of who ends up being declared the winner, you're going to have challenges. If it ends up being Kamala Harris, you're going to have more challenges from the Republicans.
I got a question for you. So, January 6th, four years ago, it was Mike Pence, and that's the role of the vice president to be that last word to, at that point, the vote is official.
Yes.
You have all the elected officials of our federal government in one place to make that determination. Kamala Harris is the vice president.
Yeah.
She will be that person.
Yes.
I just think that's rather extraordinary.
And we've had it.
But not unprecedented.
It's not unprecedented. And it's going to be interesting because if she loses, you best believe she's going to give one heck of a speech before she validates the vote. If she wins, there's going to be some type of complaint that it's crooked. And the reason why you know it's crooked is because she's validating her own election to become president of the United States. Either way, January 6th hopefully won't be as historic as it was 4 years ago. But you best believe there's going to be a lot of wrestling up because she's going to be that one in that role this time.
So Odyssey celebrates Halloween, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Oh, a week from tomorrow,
yes,
the election takes place, but it's not going to be over until that day in January. And even then, it'll be scrutinized beyond that.
Yes, and well, if it's finally quote-unquote written in stone on January 6th, it's more bluster. But up until then, I mean, you're going to hear about people, and we saw this 4 years ago, pressuring state legislatures. I mean, again, the Speaker of the House of the Pennsylvania General Assembly was part of the whole investigation afterwards. You heard the audio tapes. You saw that speaker's name in print a lot. We, of course, know about what happened in Georgia as well. From the middle of November through January, which is going to cover, obviously, the holiday season, you may still see an awful lot of consternation from people about how this election goes down. And if it ends up being Harris, we're going to go through another 2 to 4 years of that's not my president, that's not my president. Which, again, I brought this up from a national sovereignty perspective. If half your country does not respect who's in the Oval Office, you make the country more vulnerable from everything from domestic terrorism to international threats abroad. We have to be mindful of that, too.
But there's no way to stop it, because either candidate wins, you're going to have that.
Yes.
The country's split almost straight down the middle.
And it's been this bad for a while, and this level of anxiety has not been like this since the 1960s. And if you go back prior to that, I mean, you're starting to go back into the 1800s, and we're at a very dangerous point of time where whoever wins has to try to unify this country. And let's just be honest, neither one of these candidates have given a very cogent message to reunify this country. Joe Biden talked that way and then really wasn't successful with it. Obama did it and then had the meeting with the Republicans in 2009 and said, hey, listen, I won, which immediately divided people. Donald Trump has never done it well and doesn't even intend to do it well. And Kamala Harris has not succeeded at that yet and might not succeed at that. So we need leadership that's going to reunify all this in some sort of way starting in 2025.
More to come, and Governor Josh Shapiro right after the news at 8:30. Mondays in our 8 o'clock hour, we're joined by Lenny McAllister, our resident political analyst. What do we do after the election, Lenny? After we go through whatever the process is, whoever's election, what the hell do we talk about every day, every minute, every hour?
Oh, well, first of all, if Donald Trump becomes president, let's not act like there wasn't a whole bunch of stuff to talk about every single day of his presidency, whether it was the meeting with Putin or, you know,
and daily tweets at 5 a.m.
Tweets. I still talk about me drinking my daily covfefe because of his tweet about the covfefe. So, I mean, there's so many things that will come up if he's president. And let's just be honest, even if he's not getting off this platform right away, and he's back on Twitter now, and he has Truth Social, you're going to hear from him and people that end up are his spokespeople for a second.
Elon Musk buys Twitter for $44 billion, and he has turned that into his personal platform, not only for politics, but for whatever, where he's posting pictures of himself all the time. You know, he's made this his, he's defending free speech, he says, by buying Twitter. Although people that don't agree with him, he's gotten rid of those people. So it's a little disingenuous for a man whose focus was on his inventions, like Tesla and other things. What's in it for him with the government? Obviously,
policy agendas, saving money. I mean, look at what ended up happening with the Washington Post, with the endorsement. They have been endorsing presidents forever. They're about to send out an endorsement of Kamala Harris, which, by the way, it's the Washington Post. It's not a shock that they're going to endorse somebody on the left more often than not. They shut down the endorsement. And again, you go back to who now owns the Washington Post. It goes all the way back to Jeff Bezos. And you start having this question now, Larry, of, okay, I believe in free market capitalism. I also believe in freedom of speech. And when you start getting to a point in time where people can buy private institutions that are in essence, they're a private company, but a public institution that we all count on to provide a value for the common good that can now be driven by one person's agenda. How does that impact society? You brought up Twitter, the artist formerly known as Twitter, now known as X, and then an unpronounceable letter almost. And then from there, you end up having this with the Washington Post. Where are we going as a society when social media drives a whole lot of what we do politically and public policy, and now big money is going back to having the oversized influence that we had back in the late 1800s, where people forget, you know, a few very rich people, including Andrew Carnegie here in Pittsburgh, were determining the presidency and other huge political offices. You're seeing that with big money in politics now. Is that what we really want? And we were talking off the break, during the break, in regards to the rise of Donald Trump. This is how Trump got here, because people were sick of career politicians cleaving to big money and getting their way. They said, we need to break the system up. And Donald Trump, who was an outsider, a reality TV host, ended up breaking up that system. Now he's part of it now. But people now have to ask, we're really going in a direction where we're still not having our voices really heard, and we're not having government really be responsive to the collective of Americans. Where do we really go from here?
But with the division of the country, which is reflected in Washington, you can't just with a wand fix everything in a day and say you're going to make it right. You need cooperation, and we haven't had a lot of bipartisan cooperation in a long
time. But you can fix it with a wand with a good leader. I will go back to, and a lot of people don't like Ronald Reagan, but Ronald Reagan's communicative style started making people tone down some of the rhetoric on both sides. And he then had time to address the Soviet Union, to address the economy, to get our allies on track. And then by the time he got to his second term, our economy's humming again, the Soviet Union starting to be dismantled, and the threat of nuclear war started coming down. Sometimes it's not what you do with policies immediately, it's what you do with tone immediately. And it goes back to what I said in the previous segment. Harris is not really succeeding at that, and Trump doesn't want to succeed at that.
So what's going to change?
It might have to be from the top up. It might have to be from us forcing them to, hey, look, enough's enough. You're going to get us hurt, or you're going to break something you can't fix. I mean, the bottom line is we have the Middle East on fire right now. And if Donald Trump gets into the White House, there's going to be a full-throated support of Israel in a way that may not be beneficial to getting a ceasefire eventually and tamping down tensions. Same thing with Kamala Harris. Some of the social issues domestically may get ramped up so much that people that oppose some of those social issues may never get back on track. It might be the bottom up that says, listen, we want an America that works for more people. You all are going to have to calm it down. That might come from how we end up having the balance in the House of Representatives. That might come from how we have the balance in the Senate that makes that president have to moderate.
That said, we're just so close of tipping that power, too, in the Senate,
yep,
which is so critical. When is somebody going to reach across the aisle and say, all right, let's work together?
When it's beneficial to do it on a big stage. They do it on smaller items. But when it's beneficial for somebody to say, I'm going to lose some political cachet and I don't care, I'd rather have somebody name a bridge after me than you know my name on social media. Can I be popular or historic? I always ask people to lean towards being historic. That is something that outlives who you are in the moment, and it's something that's going to benefit people you'll never meet 75 years down the road. There's not enough people that are focused on that. They're more focused on, can I raise more money and can I get more likes?
What do you say to people who feel like both sides aren't going to pay attention to their real needs? Nobody's going to fix things.
I would say that, one, we've always had these instances in America where Americans felt that way, and it did get resolved. It got resolved through a lot of hard work, and it did get resolved eventually through leaders that they support that are being more altruistic. But again, it's the electorate that puts these people in positions of power. It's the electorate that is responding to either their bullying from these pulpits or their leadership that's altruistic. They're putting these people in the power. They're going to have to start moderating that, and then ideally we will have politically astute leaders that will respond to that in kind. We've had it throughout American history in the most unlikely of places. I genuinely believe, Larry, that it will happen again.
Lenny McAllister with us on the Big K Morning Show. Stick around. We've got Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro coming right after the news at the bottom of this hour. Getting ready to wrap up our 8 o'clock hour with our in-studio political analyst Lenny McAllister. By the way, you can hear him Sunday afternoons.
Indeed.
Yeah. How'd it go yesterday?
Went well. I think there's a lot of apprehension in regards to the stuff that we've been talking about. Okay, what happens on Tuesday? What happens on Wednesday? What happens 2 weeks after Tuesday? What happens when we have the new president? What's that going to feel like, too?
I think there's a percentage of people that would like it to be over. And can we find a way to mend some bridges? But it doesn't seem like that's going to happen, at least for the foreseeable future.
You know what might be interesting? I just thought about this. That voter that you just mentioned, Larry, would vote for Kamala Harris with the same rhetoric that they voted for Joe Biden with. They'll say, listen, it'll be loud, it'll be nasty for about 6 months, and then we'll have some calm. Whereas if I vote for Donald Trump, I'm probably going to get 4 years of this, and I can't do this anymore. I mean, that's part of the reason why Biden won. Some of those voters made that determination, and if they make the same type of analysis, they're going to vote for Harris. They're going to deal with all the anger and loudness for 90 to 120 days, and then hope that things get back to quote-unquote normal.
For you, obviously, this is you have to walk a line, too.
Yeah.
Because you're a Republican.
Yep.
And you speak to the Republicans in different ways. You're going to do, what, an event for Dave McCormick coming up?
I will be doing an education-centric event on Thursday night in Harrisburg. I will be meeting in a private meeting with Dave McCormick and U.S. Senator Tim Scott, who I've known and interacted with over the years since 2010. I'll be seeing him this week as well. So to your point, it's speaking as a Republican, but it's also, I'm an African American that grew up in Penn Hills. That's never going away. And it's funny because those different aspects of who I am are oftentimes the different aspects of Americans that feel like they're alienated from politics. I try in my role to walk that fine line of trying to pull them all together and say, there's a way of us all getting ahead together as Americans.
We're going to talk to you a couple of days next week.
Yes, we will.
Before and after, in between. As always, though, Lenny, we appreciate your time and input.
Larry, I appreciate being with you as always. God bless you, and God bless you all out there.
You too. Lenny McAllister on the Big K Morning Show.
Odyssey celebrates Halloween, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.